Hello and welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast, where every week your Extra Movie Butter boys break down your latest movie releases, the box office, and of course movie news. And then we always throw a little extra something on segment number two, which is what we like to call the Extra Movie Butter. But to kick things off today, of course, as always, we're going to start with the box office breakdown. But before we go to the tail of the tape, I need to say hello to the distinguished gentleman, as always, JT Benny. How the hell are you, gentlemen?
I'm doing well. A lot of news we're going to cover here in the beginning. Some sad news, which I really can't wait to, you know, talk about and gush about. Legend that we lost. But overall, not bad. Pretty chill weekend. A lot of movie watching. Two very different movies. I actually saw Turtles like a week and a half ago. So I feel like it's not as fresh in my mind as Meg 2, which I saw yesterday. But I still will have plenty to say about it.
I'm doing great, Moose. I saw these two movies. I binged watched Season 8 of BattleBots. Everything is just looking up aces right now.
Everything is coming up, Benny, folks. Well, we're going to kick off with Benny to give us his thoughts on the box office breakdown. But first, let's talk a little bit about some numbers, right? Barbie, still kicking ass. $53 million, number one over at the box office. Over a billion dollars at this point worldwide, $460 million domestic. Week three, still doing gangbusters. Number two, Jason Statham kicking the shark in the face with Meg 2 The Trench, bringing in the number two spot at $30 million. Oppenheimer, still doing well, $28 million in the third spot. $500 million worldwide at this point in time, this movie has done. I finally watched Oppenheimer over the weekend. It's a solid flick. I need to rewatch it with subtitles. Coming in at four is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem with $27 million. Not a terrible debut for this movie. Haunted Mansion rounding out your top five with $9 million. Sound of Freedom still in the top 10. $165 million domestic haul for this movie. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning came in your seventh place with $6.4 million. $400 million total box office at the moment worldwide. That's not terrible for this movie. Talk to Me, $6 million. $22 million for an A24 movie so far. That ain't too bad. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, rounding out your top 10 is Elemental with $1.2 million. So Indy's done $300 million total global box office at this point in time, but I don't still think it's going to make its money back. But Benny, I teased you being the guy who's going to give us the tale of the box office first. So take it away, my friend.
Well, despite my personal feelings on it, Barbie is clearly resonating with people. I think after the first 2 weeks of a movie, generally you get past all of the basic interest and curiosity, and then you get into the repeat business and how well the movie is sticking with people and resonating. And so Barbie is clearly resonating and sticking with people. Beyond that, I don't think there's a ton of takeaways from the box office. I think Ninja Turtles did a little bit better than I thought it would, especially being so close to In the Spider-Verse, which has a very similar visual style. So I'm happy for it. I think it overperformed from what I was expecting. But other than that, Barbie is truly resonating. The Meg is doing what it's supposed to do. I think this movie is, you know, made to make most of its money in Asia if it's going to be a huge breakout hit. And beyond that, I don't have a lot to say about it this week. But I do believe this is the biggest single weekend of the box office in like years and years and years, which I think is amazing since we were stacking disappointments on top of disappointments as far as like four movies over 25 million is a rarity.
Well, Benny, how about you? You just went, Benny. JT, my man. Sorry about that. Why don't you tell me your thoughts on the tale of the box office breakdown?
Yeah, I'll start with Turtles because it had a five-day weekend. It came out on a Wednesday compared to just the weekend. And I think it pulled closer to $40 million over the five-day, which this movie is actually made for less than $100 million. Like, they did a really good job of keeping the budget underneath something, whereas, like, Cross Spider-Verse was, like, $200 million. I mean, it just took them forever, which you watch the movie, you understand. A lot of hours and man work had to go into that movie. But I think Ninja Turtles, yeah, for $40 million debut, it's got great reviews. It's got like an A-plus cinema score, 97% Rotten Tomatoes. Word of mouth is, I think, going to carry it. And I think it's a successful relaunch. I thought it was, you know, really entertaining. And I think it's probably the best film since the original 1990 film, which I just rewatched this weekend because I was in that turtle mode. So I really enjoyed that movie. Barbie, just killing it. I mean, Barbie is one of those movies, even when I saw it the first time, I could totally understand why you'd want to go back and see it again for the repeat business because of being put into that world, that aesthetic, and seeing just the humor, the musical numbers. It's something that I think a lot of people will just go to have a good time. I think it's a very fun film. I think that's why the repeat business is just – it's a snowball effect. It's rolling down the hill, and it just keeps gathering fans and steam and praise. And $1 billion is a huge deal. So I just don't think anybody thought it would reach that level of success. So pretty crazy. What else came out? I think Haunted Mansion went down like 68%. From the last weekend, which I'm not surprised because, like me and Benny said last week, it's very forgettable. I just don't see a lot of people saying, you need to run out and see that movie. No. No one feels that way. I'm trying to think. Is there anything else in there? Barbie. What was this other big release? Oh, Meg. Meg actually is kind of disappointing because I think the first one opened to $50 million in the U.S. and this one about $20 million less. We're at $30. So that's not great for the film. But like Benny said, this is a co-production with China. It made most of its money in China. And that movie came at the very end of August, and there was like nothing else really good coming out. This didn't have that. This has Barbie, Oppenheimer, Ninja Turtles, a lot of stuff at the box office that people really want to go out and see. And Mission Impossible, which unfortunately is kind of getting forgotten because of all these other great films. Poor Tom Cruise. He's got to be mad. Those IMAX screens were given to him for 1 week, and they just extended Oppenheimer until the end of August. So I'm glad I saw Mission Impossible in IMAX the opening weekend, because after that, I think it's been basically shoved to these smaller theaters. You don't get that big sound system, that big screen. I think it was a big mistake opening this film in July. They should have waited till August, which most Mission Impossible movies open in towards the end of August. It's almost like the last thing of the summer, going out with a bang. But they decided to push it for July, maybe because of the Top Gun Maverick push. But I think it was a mistake. Should have kept it for August. But listen, the next one's already being filmed. I'm not worried. Tom Cruise is not going to get his movie canceled. We're going to have Dead Reckoning Part 2.
I am a little opposite than you guys. I'm actually surprised the Meg did as well as it did. Barbie and Oppenheimer, to me, are juggernauts right now. The Barbenheimer like fever is still there. I still see people saying that they're going for the third or fourth or fifth time to see either Barbie or Oppenheimer. So I was surprised that the Meg actually cracked that top three. The Meg also did $112 million in China over the weekend. So Benny, you're absolutely right to your point. Like, this movie is absolutely designed to be an international success. So I think the Meg, I think those who are going to see the Meg saw the Meg. It might have some legs and stay in the top five over the next weekend. But honestly, I think it's going to drop like a stone. Same with Haunted Mansion. I think Haunted Mansion will continue to drop like a stone. Those people who are going to see it saw it. Now, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, $40 million on the, we'll call it a 5-day weekend, right? It's pretty good opening for it. And like, I genuinely did not have a ton of interest to see this movie. And I'll save some of this for the spoilers because I'm kind of burned out of the whole Ninja Turtle thing. However, this movie definitely will compete for animated movie of the year against Spider-Verse. Like, the first Spider-Verse movie, word of mouth is going to get out about how good this movie is. I think the people that showed it were the kids. I think the people who showed up this weekend were the parents taking to, you know, that didn't want to take their kids to see Barbie or the Meg. And so I think word of mouth is going to propel Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I would not be surprised if Ninja Turtles is in the top three for the next couple of weeks, just because of how quality the movie is. But also, word of mouth is going to pass along. JT, you said it yourself. It's like a 97 Rotten Tomato score, and it's like a 93 or 94% like fan score. So this movie is doing gangbusters. I think it's going to do good word of mouth. I say it every week, but I'll say it again. Elemental still in the top 10. Like, we're a week or two away from this streaming on Disney Plus, and that's still putting up millions in the theaters. So good for them. I didn't think that movie stood a chance this summer. And you know what? It's done $400 million worldwide. I'm sure that the budget on that was probably $200 million for Elemental, but still, that movie has, at this point in time, turned Disney a profit, and I'm happy to see that. Any other takeaways from the box office, folks?
Not really. I think that pretty much sums it up. Well done.
All right, let's kick some ass in some movie news. What do you say? But sadly, we're not going to kick some ass on the first topic, because Oscar-winning director William Friedkin died at 87 years old today. Feels like every week we're talking about some talented folks in Hollywood passing away. For those of you who did not know William Friedkin, he's the director of The Exorcist, The French Connection. He won his Oscar for The French Connection. Blue Chips with Nick Nolte and Shaquille O'Neal. And one of his most recent ones with Matthew McConaughey with Killer Joe. But certainly a talented director. I'm a huge fan of like detective movies and whodunit type movies and The French Connection and your introduction to Popeye Doyle. I love like eccentric police detectives or eccentric detective, Hercules Poirot, the Benoit Blancs, the Popeye Doyle. So The French Connection is certainly an all-time classic for me. But yeah, 87 years young, had a slew of Academy Awards that he won along the way and put out some great and quality material. So William Friedkin, you will be missed. JT, your thoughts on the passing of Billy Friedkin?
Yeah, man, what a legend. You know, coming to the film, he's one of those directors I don't think I appreciated until I got a little bit older. I remember watching French Connection in high school, and I don't know, I remember being like, oh, that was good. And then after going to film school, graduating, moving to L.A., it was one of those things where I was like, you know, I really need to revisit the French Connection. I saw it when I was like 16, and I was blown away how good that movie was. It felt like it was – it's one of those movies where you're like, oh, every other movie just kind of copied this style. He introduced his handheld camera during this film, which makes it feel gritty. Any gritty crime drama you've ever seen with some action – I think feels like it came from The French Connection in a lot of ways. I was just flabbergasted by how much I saw other movies in this film. And that's what kind of defines a classic. It inspires all these other films after it. No movie, action movie was, you know, every action movie after Die Hard got compared to Die Hard. A lot of sports movie gets referred to Rocky. You know, it was a Rocky story, the Rocky of the year. And French Connection, in a lot of ways, is just to me like every crime drama I ever think of, like Narc, and you know some of these other films like Heat, they all a little bit take from the French Connection, where the character, it's not about the action, it's about where the character is coming from, more so than car chases, explosions. He's the opposite of Michael Bay. He basically is all about character, and the action is just a way to tell that character's emotion through filmmaking. So I think French Connection is a masterpiece. Exorcist, I mean, what do I need to say? Another masterpiece. Made horror movies a legitimate Oscar contender. That movie was up for Best Picture. And then he made Sorcerer, which is a lot of film a lot of people haven't seen, but it's considered like his forgotten masterpiece. And if you watch it, it's insane, the filmmaking that he does in this film. The bridge scene with the truck trying to go over this like little rinkety bridge like from Temple of Doom, and the physical filmmaking, practical filmmaking is just jaw-dropping. So those three movies, that's all you had in your resume, you're going into the Hall of Fame. But he made many other good films after that. Killer Joe with Matthew McConaughey was a very fascinating, dark, gritty, comedic film, which is not for everybody, but I really enjoyed that film. McConaughey's just eating it up. William Friedkin pushed the envelope a lot of times in a lot of his films. Yep. And I think, you know, you need that in film. You need to push the line forward a little bit so other movies can push it also. So rest in peace, William Friedkin. He made some of the best movies ever. And if you could do that before you pass on to the other side, you've done pretty good.
Benny, how about you? What's your thoughts and feelings on the passing of William Friedkin?
I think JTE gave an excellent epitaph, so I'm not going to disgrace it from there. Just to his family, you know, 87 is a good run. You know, it's about what we can all hope for. So I hope he was in a good place, and I wish the best for his family. And thanks for the entertainment that you provided.
Well said. So now's the time where we're going to kick a little ass. And the ass to be kicked is David Ayer. Because right now, he is swearing, nay, promising, that James Gunn is going to re-release the Ayer cut of the Suicide Squad. Now, I've got some pretty choice words about the Suicide Squad, but I let off with William Friedkin. So, Benny, I'm going to come to you. What is your thoughts on the Ayer cut of the Suicide Squad?
I would be interesting to watch it. I enjoy the original Suicide Squad. It's not a good movie, but I think it's a fun movie. And if it's not what he wanted it to be, like, I would be really interested to see what he meant it to be. I mean, it may be great. He, like, some of his movies like Fury and things like that were really dark and really interesting. So I would like to see what this looked like as a dark and sort of a gritty film. I don't ever see this going into like the theaters or anything regarding that. I think this is something like years down the road that they may drop on HBO Max or something like that. I don't think he's promising it's going to be in theaters. And I think it's going to be in the same thing with like the Batgirl movie. Like, I think once the James Gunn universe is established and everyone is comfortable with it, these are going to be like, hey, this one's for the boys. You know, we're going to throw it out there on HBO Max for people to watch.
How about you, JT? Thoughts and feelings towards the Ayer cut of Suicide Squad?
Yeah, I would love to see this because I'm with Benny. Like, I don't hate the Suicide Squad, but it looks exactly like what it is. A film that was taken away from its director, recut with a bunch of pop music to make a product that matched more like what they had in the trailers. Because I think what David Ayer made was a much darker film. I mean, the Joker is basically cut out of the movie in the third act. You've seen these pictures of him with like a grenade in his suit, like he's been blown up. Apparently, the villain was completely different. And Killer Croc was way more deadly. Like, I want to see that darker vision that David Ayer made. And not what happened was basically they cut a really good trailer with Bohemian Rhapsody and all these pop music. And it got people so excited, and the studio's like, oh, crap, that's not the movie we have. We have a really dark, messed up kind of movie. And they literally let the trailer company who made the trailers cut the movie. They don't even cut movies. They cut trailers, and they said, here, take this movie and try to make it more like your trailers. And I just, you know, feel bad for David Ayer because I do think he's a talented director. And I want, at the end of the day, I want to see the director's vision to come to fruition. No matter, and he's been so vocal about how this is not what he intended. But during, you know, the release, he's not going to go bag on his own movie. He's got a job to do. He's got to promote the film for his studio that he made. But at the end of the day, give me the David Ayer cut. I think it'd be a much better film, and I might be able to appreciate the film a lot more than we already do. A lot of people don't like that movie.
So Suicide Squad was kind of the first sign that DC Studios was in trouble. And to your point, JT, like, David Ayer has come out multiple times and said, like, this was not the movie I intended to make. He made a dark, gritty take of the Suicide Squad. And the Suicide Squad has always been kind of, it's not a fun movie, but at the time that trailer came out and people started to go like, oh, this could be the next Guardians of the Galaxy. DC at this point in time had this dark, ominous tone to it, right? Had Man of Steel, had Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. Those were dark movies. And then the Suicide Squad is being made, and it's being made in that dark tone, that ominous, you know, Gotham City. And then Marvel, on the other hand, has these fun, lighthearted superhero movies, and they're kicking ass at the box office. And DC at this point in time is going, okay, you know what? We got to do what Marvel is doing. So the movie was taken away from David Ayer and basically given the, like, hey, we're going to try to make this into a Guardians of the Galaxy type thing. And that's not what the Suicide Squad should be. And I don't believe that that was the vision for David Ayer.
I just say this. They literally wanted it so bad, they went and got James Gunn to do the sequel.
That's like, right.
Please make us a Guardians type movie.
That's right.
I agree with everything you're saying. Go ahead.
But anyway, to my point is, I'm with you guys. I want to see this. I did not like Suicide Squad. I I think a lot of these characters were wasted in that. There's some fun moments to be had. There's some cool moments to be had. But then overall, it's, I don't know, it just doesn't work. It's a bit of a mess. The villain is a terrible, terrible villain. To your point, I mean, they hyped up the Jared Leto as the Joker so much in this. And there were all the stories of Jared Leto and his method acting behind the scenes as the Joker. And he's in it for like 4.5 minutes. So I would like to see the air cut of the Suicide Squad. And I agree with you too, Benny. This isn't going to be a theatrically released movie. This will for sure just be something that they put out on HBO Max, or just Max as it's called now. Dating myself.
Let me say this. The one thing I disagree with Benny, or I don't disagree, but he said like they're going to release this after they establish the new universe and all that. I say get this out before you do that. Like, this is like the last remains of a dead corpse. Like, you listen, before we introduce this whole new DCU, you know, shared universe, here's the air cut. Just, you know, one last thing to watch before we officially move on. So if I was James Gunn, I would say release this air cut before you restart your rebuild. So that way, when you start, you're just starting and you have nothing in the way.
Well, curious question for you guys. So David Ayer is a remnant of the DCEU, right? The Snyderverse. Mm-hmm. Now, Gal Gadot came out recently and said that Wonder Woman 3 is still on and it will still be a Patty Jenkins directed movie. Now, that could, James Gunn has specified that he may allow Elseworld movies to continue in this streak. Like, there could just be these one-off movies that exist, but not in his timeline or in his universe. Thoughts on Wonder Woman 3 coming out?
I'll let Benny take the lead on this one.
I do not know exactly how they're planning to do the reboot. I am still not convinced that they are going to ship off Jason Momoa and Gal Gadot. I think they're going to shutter everything else, but I think they are still on the fence about whether or not they are going to incorporate those two into the James Gunn verse as they are. I don't think Patty Jenkins will direct a Wonder Woman 3 if there ever is one. Like, I don't know anything about her, never met her, but for whatever reason, regardless of how her movies are successful or what acclaim they get, she does not get roles. I do not see her directing that movie, especially after the last one bombed. And I don't think it'll be a Wonder Woman 3 if we get it. There may be another Wonder Woman movie in James Gunn's verse, but I just don't foresee like a separate Wonder Woman 3 in the same continuum that it was happening.
I will say this. I feel like Gal Gadot needs, she needs Wonder Woman. She needs this win. She's got this upcoming movie, and I was watching the trailer. And
Heart of Stone.
She's featured in the trailer for like 7 seconds of it. And I'm like, oh, crap. Like, they just do not have confidence in her performance. The original Wonder Woman is my favorite DCEU movie. It might be one of my favorite DC movies of all time, probably top three. And it was great. And the chemistry between Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot was perfect. And then Wonder Woman 1984 came out, and it was hot garbage. I think everyone can agree with that.
Awful.
And then what they have done with the cameos with Wonder Woman in the rest of the DC movies are terrible.
Terrible. Gal Gadot,
terrible. And this character is amazing and awesome. And Gal Gadot plays it well, but they're not giving her anything to do. So these cameos that she's having, these other movies, Flash included, are complete wastes of time. So if they're going to make a Wonder Woman 3, maybe you need to get a new fresh set of eyes. I'd like to see Patty Jenkins come back. I'd like to see somebody like a Catherine Bigelow handle a Wonder Woman movie. That would be an interesting take on that. I don't know. JT, your thoughts?
I think she's dead.
She is not. Catherine Bigelow is alive and kicking. Her last movie, Detroit, didn't do great, but it was still a good movie. Listen, she did Point Break. She has a lifelong pass in my book. I will say Wonder Woman, I feel like this would be such a different conversation if part two wasn't just so awful and tonally different than the first Wonder Woman movie. I still scratch my head. I'm like, I can't imagine watching the first film and then watching 84 back to back. I would just, I feel like I'd be like, what the heck? It feels like Burton to Schumacher. Mm. And it was that off. So I think if you're going by Flash, they're making a little gumbo stew with this DC characters. We're going to get the new. We're going to get the old. It's all going to be mixed up. I almost feel like Gunn should just get rid of Momoa and Gal Gadot and just start fresh. I think that would be the cleanest way to do it. But
agreed.
I love Momoa as Aquaman, and I do like Gal Gadot when she's in the right, when the right director in the right film and script.
Yeah.
She could be a great Wonder Woman. We've seen that in the first film. It's hard to give, but at the same time, it's like you're hanging on to these characters. How do you explain all that? I don't know. It would be easier just to restart fresh. But I say that saying I still like these two actors as these characters, so I really don't know what they're going to do. But who knows? Maybe James Gunn has a great plan, and they'll be able to merge them all together, and it's all going to work. But I'm not holding my breath.
Well, folks, we are going to take it.
Sorry.
Fuck it. We're taking a break from our sponsors right now. When we come back, we'll be talking some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Denny's asked America what they wanted in an all-you-can-eat breakfast.
I want more than just a lot of food.
I want a lot of choices.
Bacon, pancakes, and eggs any way I want them. The whole shooting match.
And I don't want it warmed under a lamp.
Tell you how I want it. I want bacon crisp and eggs over easy.
And I don't want to stand in line. Bring it to me. Thanks.
They do that at Denny's.
Denny's. Denny's.
America, there's a new all-you-can-eat Grand Slam breakfast menu. Only at Denny's.
Is that too much to ask?
The Harvey family planned the perfect vacation. What they got was the unexpected.
Captain Ron.
He's suave.
Are you kidding?
Sophisticated.
You sure you know the way?
Any fool could find it.
Well, let's hope so, huh?
And great with children.
You want a beer, you get your own beer.
He's showing them places they never dreamed of.
We're in Cuba?
Back to the rest!
And adventures they never could have imagined. Kurt Russell.
We are out of fuel!
Martin Short. Captain Ron. Rated PG-13. Starts Friday, September 18th.
Welcome back, folks. And normally during this segment, we do our Extra Movie Butter podcast, and we normally throw a little spice in there. But today we're reviewing two movies. So we got to talk about some teenagers. They're a little on the weird side, slightly mutated. Their dad is a rat. They know a little martial arts. That's right. It is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in their most recent animated version of Mutant Mayhem. This one directed by Jeff Rowe and written by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, along with a slew of other writers that are part of Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg's staple. Now, this movie came out to great reviews and put up decent numbers, $40 million on a $100 million budget. I do think good word of mouth is going to continue to propel this movie, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We talked about that in the first segment. We are here to talk about our feelings about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. And there's nobody better to kick us off than the turtle lover himself, Mr. Benny Hamlin.
Moose, I can firmly say that this is a good movie. There are a lot of parts of this movie that I do not personally like, but that's not to say this is not a good movie. This is an excellent movie. I'm just talking about for things, me personally, I grew up watching the Turtles cartoon. I spent many of hours not successfully completing the Ninja Turtles Nintendo game. You know, I enjoy all of the Ninja Turtles movies, even Turtles 3, Turtles in Time. I even enjoy that. This is a very, very good cartoon. But as a very old man who's a Ninja Turtles fan, there are a lot of aspects of it that I don't like, but I don't think that stops this from being an excellent movie.
Fair enough. JT, how about you? How did you feel about the Turtles this time around?
I got to say, I loved it. I love this movie. I thought it was so much fun from beginning to end. I love the style. They did their own thing. I think Cross Spider-Verse has inspired a lot of films. The director's film before this I really enjoyed too, which was Mitchell vs. Machines, which was a Netflix film starring Danny McBride. I was a huge fan of that one. I thought that one went on a little too long and could have been shortened down, and it felt a little bit like it was made by somebody with ADHD. But I feel like this Turtles film, while being contemporary and bringing a lot of the more modern humor into it, it was really well told. It was really fun. It was really funny from beginning to end. I was laughing. And if you ask me what's a better film, this or Across the Spider-Verse, I'm going to say Across the Spider-Verse. But while I could say that, I could also probably say I had more fun with this movie. Across the Spider-Verse gets pretty heavy at times and is visually dazzling. But I think when we reviewed it, we all agreed it was a little bit too much at times. It was like, man, this is a lot. It's a 2-hour, 40-minute movie almost. Whereas this is an hour, like, 45? Maybe hour 40? It's tight. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It's hilarious. It's funny. It has Easter eggs for any Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fan. And the animation style made it really come to life. And I think, you know, Seth Rogen bringing his humor. And not just his humor, but all his buddies. Because he got so many great voice actors to come in and bring so much. I mean, Ice Cube as the main villain in this, I thought was amazing. The soundtrack to this movie, as a 90s kid, it was a lot of 90s rap. Reminded me a little bit of Rise of the Beast. A lot of beat drops from the 90s. I was loving it. Yeah, I just could not believe how much I enjoyed this movie. Now, and Benny says as an old Turtle fan, he has some issues. If I was directing a live-action Turtles movie, it would be much darker. And it would have, like, I would basically get the guys who did the raid and have them do all the motion capture for the turtle fights. Like, I would make a dark, gritty, like, martial arts movie out of Ninja Turtles, but I would also sprinkle in some humor. This movie is not trying to do that. This movie is trying to be just entertainment from beginning to end. And it's a comedy, first and foremost, I think more so than any other genre, comic movie or anime movie. I think it's a comedy, first and foremost, and it accomplishes that beautifully. So, yeah, I kind of loved it.
I was pretty worn out of the Ninja Turtles. And the two most recent outings, 2014 and 2017, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Out of the Shadows are just terrible movies.
Terrible.
And I saw the original 1990s in theaters. I think that there's a lot of redeemable qualities about the 2007 animated one, TMNT.
Yeah, that's good.
But I really had not a ton of ambition to see this movie or a ton of want to see it because I was just burned out of the Turtles. This is a 50-year-old franchise at this point in time. And, you know, it's got 8 movies to its credit. But damn it, this movie was fresh. It was such a fun take of the Turtles. It was the first time that I felt like the Turtles actually lived up to the teenage part of it. The whole voice cast for the Turtles is all teenagers. So it actually felt like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm going to kind of express the teenage in this because that's what they are. They want to go to high school. They want to be accepted. It's kind of like a coming of age type movie. These are my notes that I wrote down. Tons of pop culture reference. Oh my gosh. The music, the soundtrack was kick ass. Such a good mix of humor, action, and then there was tons and tons of nostalgia. And we've all talked about this before. I eat up nostalgia as much as I possibly can get. And this Turtles movie absolutely gave that to me. But then I also have to praise, on top of the Turtles being voiced correctly, the voice talent that they picked for each individual character was so spot on. Jackie Chan as Splinter is my favorite part of the movie. Ice Cube as Superfly is outstanding. Paul Rudd as the Gecko.
Oh man, Mondo Gecko maybe steals the movie.
Steals the movie.
Like, humans, take that stick, go.
The vocal talent in this is off the charts. But again, like the characters that they all like are cast as is spot on casting. So I dug this movie a lot. I very much enjoyed it. We've all kind of given our general impressions. We might as well go into spoiler territory. JT, what worked for you? What didn't work for you?
You know, the funny thing is, I think by making the Turtles younger, you do get more humor. But that's, you know, I feel like when I just rewatched the 1990 Steve Bannon film, and that movie is pretty dark. It has some violence, and it's a pretty darkly lit, kind of gritty film. This movie obviously is not going for that. I think by making them younger, that helped make it more, like you said, I believe Seth Rogen said in an interview that all the cast recorded together, so they're able to improv together as they were talking. Mm-hmm. So it felt like I think somebody compared it to The Goonies. You watch the movie The Goonies by Richard Donner, and he lets all the kids talk over each other. It creates like this frantic kind of energy that only a bunch of kids together can really make. And I feel like by doing that in this film, I felt it through the performances. Whereas Seth Rogen, who's done many of animated movies, he's in Kung Fu Panda, he's in Lion King remake, he's used to just being in a booth by herself. And I think it was very smart of him and Evan Goldberg to realize, let's get these guys in the same room, let them riff, and create that kind of teenage energy. And I agree with you, Jackie Chan as Splinter is so inspired. Just the way he sounds, his dialect is just funny, the way he says things. You know, his English isn't great, and I think it works for the character.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some great jokes with him in the very beginning. His only friend was a cockroach, and somebody stepped on him, and he's like, and then I ate him. Yeah. Just the way he said it, they don't show it, but I was like, this is hilarious. Yeah, I want to give the cast, big shout out. I think Paul Rudd honestly kind of steals the movie in a lot of ways. He's just so good. And one of my favorite notes in the movie is in the credits. It says, "In introducing Paul Rudd as Mondo Gecko." And I'm like, what? That makes no sense. I just love it. It's just Seth Rogen having, fun with his friend. And yeah, I mean, Post Malone as a stingray who's just like singing everything he can. You got Rose Byrne as the crocodile. It's a reunion of Neighbors and Neighbors 2. And Ice Cube, I think you can't overlook Ice Cube. He's so good in this. You hear Ice Cube every time he talks, but he's really funny. And I think that's what's great about Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, helping write this movie, is their humor is never lost. And it's honestly one of the funniest movies I've seen this year. It might be the funniest movie I've seen this year. Barbie's up there too. I thought Barbie was really funny. I know Betty didn't find that movie funny. But this and Barbie are probably the two best comedies I've seen all year, and I'll be shocked if I get anything where I laugh more than I did in this movie. And again, the visual style I thought was amazing. So that's just a couple things I want to touch on.
How about you, Benny? You like the movie, you're a Turtles fan. What worked for you? What didn't work for you here?
So I'll explain it. If you look at this movie as it is what it is, it's wonderful. It's funny. There's some good action scenes. I don't care for the pop art animation style, either in this or the Spider Into the Verse movies, but that's a personal preference. I just, to me it's distracting, but that aside, it's a very good turtle story. You're right. They're a teenager. They have a really good dynamic with April O'Neil, and it is fun throughout. Like if you have kids, I would encourage you to take the kids to it before I would the end of the Spider-Verse, just because there isn't any heavy baggage that you're going to have to explain to them afterwards. It did have very much the vibe of a Saturday morning cartoon, and so I think it worked really well on that level. So now the one thing that I will say that did not work for me, it wasn't the movie that I wanted. The movie that it is excellent. It's a very funny comedy about Ninja Mutant Turtles. It is not the Ninja Turtle movie that I want. I've never been given the Ninja Turtle movie that I want, but that is a personal preference thing that has nothing to do with this movie, which on its own is great. So I did not care for the fact that Superfly was Superfly and not Baxter Stockman. To me, that made no sense.
Well, we still got Baxter Stockman. Do you think maybe they're saving him for a sequel?
It could be. But like, I just didn't understand why you just didn't have Ice Cube playing Baxter Stockman. At least give that to me. You have a giant fly in your universe, so don't give me a giant fly that doesn't feed my nostalgia. That's like, and that, like Bebop and Rocksteady and things like that, they were made into good guys as opposed to villains. So it didn't work for me at the end that everyone was kumbaya and happy. Because even though it's always like a Saturday morning lighthearted thing, and even in the movies, the Turtles are in a lot of ways, they're tortured characters. They're very much Batman. They're isolated. They're alone. They're vigilantes. And even though that's a very funny movie, very enjoyable movie, I wouldn't complain about watching it again today, even though I just watched it earlier today. It did lose that spirit of what the Turtles, I think, in their heart are. And so I guess that's a nitpick, but it as an isolated whole, you know, without my personal feelings on it, excellent movie.
Yeah, I just want to say I agree with what Benny's saying. Like I said, if I was making a Turtles film, I would get the guys who did The Raid. There'd be some really great martial arts. Some like Raphael almost gets beat to death in the first movie in 1990. He's literally on a roof, gets jumped by the foot, gets thrown through a window. And I remember April's like, is he dead? He's like, no, he's alive, barely. I'm like, that's pretty dark. And I'd like to have that level of darkness and violence in my Turtle movie. But I also agree with Benny. This is obviously where they were not trying to go for that at all in this movie. Like, they just had a totally different idea of where they're going to go with it. I mean, at the end, I love the end of the 1990 film because it's just the four Turtles fighting Shredder. And they're literally taking turns trying to beat him in martial arts. And they can't beat him. This movie ends with a giant monster who's like made up of all these other creatures. He's a giant mutant, and they're like driving off buildings. It's not what I remember, you know, what my idea of what the Turtles movie would be. I would rather have them fighting Shredder on a roof and learning how to fight him and, you know, actually using martial arts. They really don't use their martial arts once they use it in the very beginning. They show that really cool montage with No Diggity, and then just taking out all these dudes. But the end of the movie, they're not using those martial arts. They're literally just in a giant kind of a summer blockbuster trying to take out this Godzilla-type monster. So in some aspects, this feels way more like a cartoon than it does like a Ninja Turtle movie at times. So I wrestle with those things as a Ninja Turtles fan, but I also realize this is not the Ninja Turtles I grew up with. This is the new generation. This is a new thing. And I kind of once I realized that, I just really enjoyed the movie. If you're a huge Turtles fan and you love the source material, I could totally understand you being like, what is this? This is just a straight up kids comedy, but there's still things to love about it.
And the Superfly Kaiju was a little off kilter for the Ninja Turtles. And, you know, it's kind of in the title, right? They're ninjas. Ninjas are secretive. They move in the shadows. Right. I did enjoy how all of them kind of teamed up and became friends. And it was almost like they found a family amongst each other. I mean, at one point in the movie, the Turtles even consider joining the mutants. And Superfly's gang. And so like the giant Superfly Kaiju was weird for me too. And I agree. Like I would have liked to have seen like a little more of like the ninja fighting, like between the gangs, and yeah, maybe at the end they see eye to eye instead of this giant, weird mutated, fly with like horse legs. That thing was super weird. But Benny, I don't believe you cast a guy like Giancarlo Esposito as Baxter Stockman and don't bring him back for future movies. I fully believe that this movie is going to get a sequel. They've introduced this universe. I actually think that there's some fun stuff that they can do because, spoilers, at the end of the movie, the Turtles are kind of accepted. April O'Neil introduces the world to these mutants and these Turtles. And at the end of the movie, they're going to the high school with April O'Neil. The gal who's playing April O'Neil, Io Edebiri, she's killing it on The Bear. I don't know if you guys have watched The Bear.
Bear's great.
The Bear is such a freaking good show. But I actually enjoyed that the Turtles are out in the open because there's a lot of ways I think that you can take it, especially with the post-credit scene. The post-credit scene introduces us to the Shredder, right?
Yeah.
At some point, humanity can turn on the Turtles. It can get a little darker. This was a light, upbeat, fun movie, lots of humor, and it ended on a very happy note, but it introduces the Shredder at the end of the movie, right? There's a lot of possibility that the Shredder can turn humanity against the Turtle and forcing them, you know, back underground again to where they have to become these vigilantes as they grow. But as far as the teenage story for them, I loved it. I actually love the little montages of Splinter and his different like hairdos. He has like the dad mustache at one time. but as far as the teenage version of these Turtles and their story, I liked where this wrapped up because it also does introduce an interesting universe where these mutants exist and they exist amongst humans. And so I don't know. I think that there's a lot of direction in which they can go with sequels to this. But one of you guys said it earlier, JT, I think you said it, that they allow these kids to kind of improv with each other. Go on YouTube and watch. There's a scene with all of the kids and they're talking YouTube videos and they're just letting them go, and they're just letting the screen time run. And there's so many little bits and pieces of like this, like 20-minute conversation between all these boys just calling out different YouTube videos that they threw into the movie. And I agree. The chemistry is awesome. I love that they were able to do that like with an animated movie, which means that they did they had to have done the voice recordings first before they did the animation to sync up with the two of them. And I think that that's such a unique way of doing animated movies, introducing improv. So you do the voice talent first and then you animate the movie, as opposed to the opposite where you're trying to keep up with the animated sequences on a set script. So I applaud this movie. I of the Ninja Turtles, this is my favorite of all of the Ninja Turtles that have come out. I'm not as high up on the Turtles in general. I watched these movies. I watched all the Ninja Turtle movies like 3 or 4 times a couple of years ago for the Schmodown, because I figured I got to get good at Ninja Turtles because nobody else will. But I did kind of experience a fatigue, and I feel like this movie for me really brought me back into the world of the Ninja Turtles.
I should say they have announced the sequel's already greenlit, and I believe they announced a TV series for what are they on Paramount? Is it Paramount Plus? I'm not sure who released them, but it's going to be, I think they said they're going to do 2 seasons and then that'll lead into the second film. My question is, are these TV series going to be as high quality animation as this film? Or is it going to be one of those cases where it's like, oh, you know, we made this for movies, but now when we do the TV version, it's going to be a much more scaled down artistic style. I think the kids are all coming back. So a lot of the voice cast has come back for the TV show. I'm just curious if it's going to feel like something that is just not nowhere near as the quality as the film. And then when we get the second film, we'll be back to that quality. Because of how much I enjoy this movie, I will definitely give the show a chance just because of how much I enjoyed this film.
I would say just because of the sort of the pop art style, I think it would be easier to do like a scaled down, cheaper version of this that wouldn't be so glaringly obvious. Like when you go from the computer animated type of characters, like from, let's say, Elemental to the Paw Patrol, even though it's that same computer style, you know, animation, you can tell that there's a huge drop off. But since a lot of this is designed intentionally to be imperfect and to have a lot of noise in the background, I think this style will translate well to sort of a cheaper long form setup.
Yep, I think you nailed it right on the head, Benny. I think we're going to see a cheaper toned down version of the animated series. I mean, you may even just see a straight animated series continuing with the vocal talents. But I don't think we're going to get anywhere to the quality of this. And I know the director was saying that some of the animation styles, he wanted to make it seem as if a teenager had drawn it. So, you know, the windows are just kind of a squiggly line in the background. And I think that that's a very like unique choice for animation, but I think that a television version of this is going to be totally dumbed down. But no, that makes me glad to hear that they've already greenlit a sequel to this. I very much enjoyed this movie. I'm sure I've said that 100 times, but let's talk about what we didn't enjoy. Is there anything that, besides the giant fly mutant kaiju, that didn't sit well with you guys?
Well, let me just... It was so weird I enjoyed it, the giant kaiju thing. Like, I don't even think it was a fault. Like, I did not enjoy it. That's the thing. I just, like, I would like to see them use their weapons a little bit more. Like, I feel like I barely saw Michelangelo use his nunchucks.
Yeah.
Donatello used his staff, but it was mainly... like, use it to hit the gas pedal at one point. Donatello, I got to use a sword a couple times, but I want to see him fighting the foot and, like, actually using their weapons and doing, like, some cool martial arts. So I'd like to see some more of that in the sequel. So that was one of my critiques. I was like, all right, cool. You know, because it was Mutant Mayhem, they didn't really get to use those things because they were facing other mutants. And they didn't even want to fight the other mutants. They all became friends against Superfly. So that'd be, I guess, my negative would be that. But let me give some more positives. I love that they got Go Ninja, Go Ninja, Go.
Yeah.
Just for a few seconds in that scene. And I love that whole montage of them taking out all the different crime lords. I just thought that looked amazing. I thought it flowed really well. Just, you know, the way it would transition from one turtle to the next. I thought that was awesome. And I was wondering... what movie were they going to show when they went to this drive-thru? Because I was like, who produced this movie? It's going to be one of the production, whoever produced this movie, it's going to be one of their movies. I was like, oh man, what could it be? Will it be a newer film, an older film? And they got Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And I'm like, awesome. I don't know why they picked that movie. I'd love to ask the director why that movie and what other movies was he considering. But I just loved that moment because it wasn't animated. It was the actual movie. I just love when movies do stuff like that. Also, one of my favorite jokes, and you might have missed this joke. It was so quick. After they've gone to the store and got their groceries, they're in the subway, and they're crawling underneath, you know, trying to not be seen by humans. And some teenager just goes, I love being free and be able to go wherever I want. It's just like he literally – I love when a joke isn't trying to be subtle at all. It just says exactly what the director wants to say. Like, oh, I love being free and not a mutant. It's just like so good. So, yeah, I don't have a lot of negatives to say about this movie. I loved it. It's one of my favorite films of the year. And like I said, while I think Cross the Spider-Verse is probably a more impressive film overall, I think I enjoy this one more. And I'd probably rewatch this before I watch Cross the Spider-Verse. Like you said, Benny, or no, sorry, you said Moose. I think it's a two-person race for best animated film. It's between Across the Spider-Verse and Teenage Mutant Turtles, and I think there's a case for either one to win.
I think I enjoyed this one a little bit more. I need to rewatch now. Across the Spider-Verse just came up on one of my movie channels, so I'll need to go back and revisit it. But first impression with Across the Spider-Verse was just how much is happening at one point in time. It's overload. It's sensory overload that's happening.
It's half a movie, too.
Yeah, and it's half a movie. I enjoyed this one. I had a much more fun experience with this one. Like I said, the big, you know, Mondo Mutant Superfly, yeah, it was a little weird, but for the most part, I loved it. I loved the sequence where Splinter saves the Turtles.
Yes, it's a Jackie PCR, Chan. Right? Yes. It's a Jackie Chan fight. I love it.
It was so great. And again, like having Jackie Chan as Master Splinter is such inspired casting. But no, overall, I very much enjoyed this movie. I can't speak highly enough. Benny, why don't you wrap us before we move on to the next segment?
Yeah, like I said, I have no criticisms really of this movie. I have of this movie itself. Like contained in of its own, this is a wonderful kids animated cartoon. Like all my complaints are just them not being what I want it to be, but what it is wonderful. Like I would definitely watch this again before I would Across the Spider-Verse. One, because even though, you know, the animation style is still not for me, it's much less confusing and distracting than Across the Spider-Verse. But I will say there are two things about this movie that are in this movie that I cannot stand. One is I don't like the fact that they paired up Master Splinter with a vomiting cockroach. He deserves better. He can do better. He's a catch. And second off, the fact that they made the Turtles in any way inspired by the worst film of the 1980s, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which is the biggest pile of shit that humanity has produced in the last 50 years, just brought out anger in me. Fuck Ferris Bueller. Edit that out. Then this is a great, great modern cartoon.
I knew you had it in you. I was going to say something when JT was pointing out the Ferris Bueller's, but I figured you were going to bring it home for us, Benny, and you did not disappoint, buddy. Well, folks, we're going to take a break. We're going to move on to our next segment where JT and Benny are going to review The Meg 2, The Trench.
Sunday. It's shocking.
Gee, Al, I wish you could feel my heart.
It's horrifying.
I wish I could feel your throat.
It's the Bundy second honeymoon. An all-new Married with Children. Then, he's kind.
Hurry up, Larry. I'm late for the beauty parlor.
Yeah, 40 years late.
He's gentle.
You're a very charming lady. Tell me, where's Mr. Kong?
And he's the perfect role model.
I'd rather him protect himself with this.
You're making a this out of yourself.
Richard Lewis and Don Rickles star in Daddy Dearest after Married with Children Sunday.
The flight is in the air. Hijackers are on board.
Who's in charge?
You are.
One passenger is fighting back.
You, back your seat.
God, please.
Wesley Snipes is passenger 57.
Chill out. I'm one of the good guys.
Terror at 40,000 feet and flying. Passenger 57.
Tell me to do this.
I'm the best. Rated R. Starts Friday, November 6th at a theater near you.
All right, folks, welcome back. We always love our sponsors. It's a good one. Pretty sure we're going to get a Captain Ron trailer in there sooner or later to, in honor of our good buddy JTE. But
he would have, if he was in Meg 2, it might have been a better movie.
Well, in honor of our good friend Benny and the always enjoyable Captain Ron, we're going to have these guys review Meg 2, The Trench. Now, if you go back to one of our earlier episodes, we talked about our most anticipated movies of the summer. And this was Benny's most anticipated movie of the summer. So The Meg 2, directed by Ben Wheatley, starring Jason Statham, Lee Bingbing, Paige Kennedy. We'll just go with Jason Statham because I think for our audience, everybody knows him. But Benny, I want you to kick us off, man, because this, you listed this as one of your most anticipated movies of the summer with everything that we had coming out. Tell us why and tell us how you like this movie.
So I'm a sucker for shark movies like Jaws. I even like Jaws the Revenge. If there's, you know, I like that terrible one that came out like late last year with Alicia Silverstone. Sharknado. I like Sharknado. If you put a shark in a movie, I'll watch that bad boy, and there's probably a good chance I enjoy it. And The Meg is a giant shark. So there was really no way that, you know, I wasn't going to be a mark for the original Meg. And so because of that, you know, I was geared up for this film. And I'll say it did not disappoint me. I thoroughly enjoyed this film. And, you know, I love bad movies. I make no bones about it, but I walked out of this movie smiling, and you know that I married the right woman because my wife leaned over to me on the drive home. And she goes, "That's probably my favorite movie this year."
Sister Sarah.
Yes. So I will say this. This movie is poorly titled. They should not have called this movie Meg 2. The Megs are barely in this movie, and it has very little to do with sharks. If they had called this Fast and the Furious 10, it's pretty much, you know, people would love it. They would be gushing over how irreverent it is and how it's popcorn fare. You can turn your mind off. Mm-hmm. You know, if you didn't go in expecting giant sharks in this movie and just went in expecting dumb fun, you would love it. I went in expecting giant sharks, didn't get them, but it was turn off my brain, super popcorn fun that I was thrilled with.
How about you, JT? You seem a little down on this movie.
Here's the thing. It's so complicated. It's crazy that these movies are this complicated. Because the first Meg, I thought was well-directed for the most part. The director was John Turteltaub, who did Cool Runnings, While You Were Sleeping, National Treasure. I think he's a good director who makes good popcorn films. I don't think he was given the budget or script that I would have liked the Meg to have been. I think the first Meg has some fun moments in it, but it was held back by PG-13, and you never really got the pure carnage like I was hoping to get. I wanted to see Meg eat people like Cheerios. I just wanted him eating hundreds of people, and you only got a few people, and that's so quick. And so the first one was fine. It was fine. And the second one, I actually think, has some better set pieces and some more fun than the first film. But it's not as directed as well. I wish John Turteltaub came back to direct the sequel, because I think Ben Wheatley, who is a director I really like when he makes these indie horror films like Kill List and The House of the Devil, the films I really enjoy and that are really micro-budget films but have a lot of style and super, super violent films. I think he was thrown into this big-budget Meg 2 movie, and he just wasn't up to task. I don't think he knows how to make these kind of movies. I'm sure he learned a lot while making it, but I just think he wasn't up to the task. So I liked certain aspects of this movie. Like, I think in some ways it's a better structure than the first film. Like, it builds to a better ending than the first film, but the execution in this one wasn't as good as the first movie. And I understand people, like, you know, some people enjoy it as a bad movie, But this is a big budget film. They're not trying to make a $30 million bad budget movie. Mm-hmm. They're making, you know, a $100 million bad budget movie. And Jason Statham's a really good leading man. I think he's really good, and I like that he's in this one more. And there are some fun moments in it, but just overall, I felt kind of the same way I did with the first one. Good ideas, great premise, did not live up to either of them. And it's not bad enough for me to be like, oh, it's so bad, I enjoy it. But it's not good enough for me to be like, it's so good, I enjoy it. It's in that middle ground, which is honestly, like we said before, it's some of the worst places to be.
So here's what made me love this movie, and this is what my wife really loved about it.
What's that?
Is one, the studio totally didn't – this Ben Wheatley guy, they did not let him direct this movie. I can tell you that a director had so little to do with this movie being put together the way that it is. This movie was like a 80s and 90s scenic game. So, like, if you go through and watch, like, scenes of this movie, they are almost all recreations of scenes from, like, super famous action and comedy movies. And I think people are getting that parody.
Well, we lost Benny for a second there, so finish that last thought again, Benny.
So, like, if you watch this movie as a whole, it is like a scenic game from the 80s and 90s.
Got that.
Most of the scenes in this movie are iconic scenes from other movies that they have just put Jason Statham in and added a shark in somehow. Like, for example, going into spoilers here.
Yeah, let's just jump into spoilers.
Let's take a bite out of those spoilers.
Without spoilers, yeah. Go ahead.
So there is a point where Jason Statham is fighting the main human villain of this movie on like a mind thing. And it is the exact same scene out of Temple of Doom. He even hits him with a rock the exact same way he does in Temple of Doom. There's a scene directly ripped out of Die Hard where he, instead of a table, he's under a dock while the guy's walking over top of the dock with the gun pointed down. There are multiple scenes from Jaws. Like, he has a helicopter, like in Jaws 2, spoiler alert for Jaws 2, you know, Brody is smacking this cable in the water with his giant paddle to attract the shark. And that's how he kills him. There's a scene where Jason Statham's doing the exact same thing, but with a helicopter blade. So the entire movie are these scenes from more iconic movies just done in dumb ways with Jason Statham. And it was like me and her were playing this great game. And I think people have missed, like, sort of like the undercurrent comedy that all of these scenes are ripoff scenes. And that's what made this movie work so well for me.
I don't know if I could give the filmmakers that much credit. I think part of it is you're bringing that to it. Maybe I'll give you the banging of the helicopter blade, which is similar to Jaws 2. I might be able to give that one to you. But I think that's just going by. That's how all we've been taught about sharks through the Jaws movies. We know if you bang things, they will come. So it's, you know, Tremors did it. You bang on the ground, the tremors are going to come. So it's hard for me to say. He brought, like, I didn't think about any of those movies while I was watching those movies. No, so I don't know if you're bringing that to the movie yourself or if the movie was actually, I think by saying they were making these homages is almost giving this writer and director way too much credit.
No. If you put side by side cut ups, like, these were not things that they dumbed into. These were intentional choices because at points they use the exact same phrases from the movies they are ripping off. They did that at least 10 times in this movie. And I think it just went over everyone's head and they're like, this is just a shitty movie. But it is a movie that is intentionally being shitty, recreating scenes from better movies.
Well, I'm going to deduct a point from both of you guys because it's the graboids are from Tremors. Okay. Yep. So if you're referring to Tremors, please refer to them as graboids.
Okay. I apologize.
Now, not having seen this movie, Benny, you alluded to this. It's called The Meg 2.
Yes.
The preview show multiple sharks, but then you said there's hardly any sharks in this movie.
Yeah.
There's more than the first one, I would say.
Yeah, like the big criticism of Meg 1 is the Meg wasn't in it. And I think that's the fair criticism of this. Like, it's called The Meg 2. This movie should have just been called The Trench. Like, Meg should not have been in the title. And I think that's part of what, other than the fact that I think this homage thing that I'm insisting on went completely over everyone else's head. I think that's a lot. People go in and they want the giant shark movie. Even I want the giant shark movie. But I figured that, like, since they did that in the first movie, they were not going to just give you the Meg that you wanted in this one. So I wasn't necessarily disappointed. But really, the sharks are only in the movie for the last 15 minutes and maybe the first 10. Other than that, there's these weird dinosaur creatures that are a ripoff of Jurassic Park. And things like that. So, yeah, if you're going for shark action itself, you're going to get a very small dose. You have to go to this movie looking for dumb sci-fi action.
So I agree and disagree with Benny on certain aspects of what he was saying. So there is not a lot of Meg in the first half of this movie. This movie is 2 hours too long, by the way. Should have been hour 40, hour 35.
Yowza.
I will say the first hour, you don't get a lot of the Meg, but they do some interesting things. They do some like walking on the ocean floor. There's other creatures that come out. Kind of remind me a little bit of the Kristen Stewart movie Underwater, which I think is actually a great underwater horror film.
Yeah, it's very good.
Nothing like this. But there's actually some cool stuff. The first hour of the movie feels like a survival film at times. It felt like Poseidon Adventure, where people are stuck underwater and have to try to get their way back to the surface. And because I was actually kind of invested in what they were doing with that kind of like survival movie, monster movie they were making, I was still entertained. Whereas like in the first film, when the Meg wasn't on the screen, I was pretty bored. So that's why in some ways I think this is a better structured movie, because I just think there's more going on. It becomes more of a creature feature. Like Benny said, there are three sharks at the end of this movie, and they're out there ripping and roaring. And there's these little creatures, which I don't know what the hell they're little dinosaurs. They're
dinosaurs, and there's a kraken,
and there's a huge giant squid. So it's literally like a monster. Like that's why I think the third act of this movie, it goes on too long. But they go to this place called Fun Island, where all these rich people are just having a blast, and they're the closest island to where all the Megs are, where all these dinosaurs are, and where the giant squid is, and they all attack these people. And the problem is, when they get attacked, it's fun, but it's never there's so much more fun that could have been had with these creatures and all these people on this beach, and it feels very tame, very held back, and very PG-13. If this movie's rated R and they went just like full on crazy at the end of this movie, it would have been a rip roaring good time. I think of like Cabin in the Woods. That movie plays with the genre of horror a lot. By the end of the movie, they go balls to the wall horror crazy with all these characters. I wanted this movie to go Meg, Jaws, shark killer crazy with a squid and dinosaurs. Like they could have went another level. In these movies, Meg 1 and 2, they just never. They never get to that level. I don't know why. I think it's because they're trying to hold on to the PG-13. I think it's because they just don't have a good script, honestly. Like, these movies aren't bad enough for me to enjoy them as just bad movies. They're not good enough to be as good movies, but they're okay movies. And that's why I think both movies are just okay. Can I watch it and turn my brain off? Yeah. But am I going to be like, this is one of the great monster creature movies, like Tremors? No way. It just doesn't come close to Tremors. So that's where I stand.
So I'm going to throw one challenge out. I don't remember the name of the African American character who was like the comedy relief in the movie.
Jay Washington. Yeah.
What's that?
Jay Washington.
Is that Jay Washington?
No.
Oh, yeah, I was like, really?
When the first Meg came out, I said, Jay, why did you not star in this? He goes, I know. Everyone keeps telling me that.
So towards the end of the movie, like, he kills this little dinosaur thing. If you look at like when he dives to kill the little dinosaur thing, mm-hmm. It is the Murtaugh dive from Lethal Weapon, the exact same thing.
Things to this movie.
No, I
guarantee you nobody on that set was thinking we need the Murtaugh dive right here.
Yes,
nobody was saying that.
Telling you, you could do side-by-side break. When this movie comes out on DVD, JD.
Yes, great. I want to see a video on your channel.
Yes, breaking this all down. Side-by-side breakdowns and this movie will become a cult classic because I'm the one guy that understood that this director who they just fucked over, but they were just said, we don't think you know what you're doing. We're just going to do the greatest hits of 80s and 90s action. That's what we're doing here, guy. And that's what they did. And that's why this movie's great.
I can't wait for the side-by-side from you, Benny. I love it.
Listen, you want a great movie that does homages to all the great action movies? Go watch Hot Shots Part 2. Because that is a great lesson in taking great genre action movies and putting them in a spoof. This movie is not trying to be a real spoof at any point. It is trying to be just a over-the-top creature feature. And to me, it never goes over the top. It just plays it safe the whole time.
It is a meta spoof. It is a spoof that they're not letting people know is a spoof.
I guess. Agree to disagree.
I mean, listen, if you would have sprinkled in a little Lloyd Bridges in the Meg 2, I think it would have definitely elevated
that movie. Hell yeah. But, that's the thing. I would love to see the cast in this movie. Everyone feels like they're just there to collect a paycheck. No one feels like they're fully invested. I would love to see this movie cast with people who are just like there to have a really good time. These people, I will say, the guy from Lost, I don't remember his name. He's the only one who kind of knows what kind of movie he's in because he's just like rolling his eyes at everything. He's basically playing a cartoon character. And I thought he was actually really funny in the movie. But everyone else thinks they're making, you know, Jaws 2, not Jaws 1, but Jaws 2. They think they're making a really good big action summer film, and I just don't think that's what it is.
Now, Benny, you touched on it earlier in that you think part of these Meg movies are made for an international crowd, too. Mm-hmm. So, to your point, JT, you mean how much of the casting that you're complaining about is specifically designed to appeal to an international market?
I don't know. I think the little girl is the same girl from the first film. She's fine. The lead actor who kind of took over for the female in the first one, her name is like, can't pronounce her name, but she had some controversy. So they had to drop her from the second film. So the main character in this one plays her father. But the thing is, all these characters that return from the first movie, they even make jokes about the first movie. And I'm like, I don't remember Meg enough to know what the hell you're talking about. Nobody saw that movie 50 times and remembers exactly what you're referencing to. This movie's acting like Meg 1 is like this huge, it made $500 million. I get it. But nobody I know is quoting Meg in my daily life. And I live around a lot of cinephiles. And I don't think anyone's going to be quoting Meg 2. So I do wonder if maybe the international audience liked this movie more than we did. And they put those jokes in for them. But I think the international, I have no problem with like the international cast members. The movie's just got a bad script and I think it's poorly directed. Even like the bad guys with machine guns feels like they're really bad acting. It's bad actors and bad dialogue. And they're doing is grunting and like shooting machine guns. And they don't even come off believable to me. They feel like a bad video game.
Were you expecting to go into the Meg 2, the Trench, and see an Oscar-worthy performance?
No, but with Ben Wheatley directing, someone who makes really serious, low-budget, gritty, R-rated films, I was hoping he'd bring a little bit of that into the movie, and he didn't.
That's fair.
So I don't know who was responsible for the choices, but like I said, I feel a lot of things in this movie were intentional, you know, and they were like a very weird version of comedy that I appreciate. Like I have always been fond of saying the best jokes in this world you will ever tell are the ones that no one ever knows you're telling. Like I have carried on relationships with people sheerly out of sarcasm. Like my entire relationship with a person is like a meta version of sarcasm. I don't even like them, but I keep the relationship going because I find it funny that I'm doing that. And I think this movie was like that. Like, if you look at the Weird Al movie, UHF, when it came out, people hated it. Like, that critics savaged that movie. But no one really knew at the time what Weird Al was doing. But now it's a cult classic because people are like, that's what Weird Al was doing. And I think in time, like, this movie is never going to be beloved. But I think in time, people will figure out what the movie was doing. And they will regret savaging it like they are on the internet right now.
Here's the only thing I'll say to Benny. maybe the movie was so lazy and not put together that as they were shooting it, they were just making up shit as they go. I could see that maybe being like, what do we do here? I don't know. Maybe let's do the Die Hard on the table. Let's just do it with the...
Yes, deck. That's what they did the entire movie.
But I don't think that it was written that way. I don't think it was I think it was literally, we have no original thoughts. We need to make this movie go along. Hey, you need to shoot this dinosaur. And he's like, what if I do the Lethal Weapon thing? Yeah, go ahead, do that. And he just said, roll. That was probably as much thought that went into those homages than at all. Like, that's as very little thought went into them. They were probably just shot on the day and come up with on the spur of the moment, because the movie was probably just a fly in the pants kind of movie.
So I will make one more statement. It's a question for you, and then I'll let the whole thing go. We can wrap this up. So now you're saying that this director was good. Like, I'm saying he had nothing to do with it, because to me it just really feels like fun cobbled together pieces of other movies.
Mm-hmm.
But if he is like a really serious director and his movies are really organized, like if it wasn't just studios just saying like, fuck it, we're doing the greatest hits, which is what I think happened. Do you think he's a smart enough director where he's just like, I'm going to make a comedy so meta, no one knows what's happening?
I don't think so. Because here's another thing. There's a different cut of this movie going out to China audiences, where it features a lot less Statham, a lot less of the American characters, and much more of the international audience.
Mm-hmm.
So he said in interviews, he basically was shooting two movies at once. One version for China, one version for America. And I just don't think that's the kind of way you should be making a movie. And I feel like you feel that in the film. You feel two different sets of characters, two different storylines that are kind of merging, but can go off. It's like a choose your own adventure. So I think he stitched this version together for America and he stitched a different version for China. And I just think, you know, that's not the best way to make a movie. You should go and make it one solid story, beginning, middle, and end. And I do think they just came up with a lot of stuff on the fly. And maybe he did think to himself, let's just do all this 80s, 90s stuff. But if he did do it, maybe it is there, but I don't think it was executed very well, because it didn't at no time pop out to me. And now that you say it, I understand all those scenes you're saying, and it still feels like, yeah, sure, okay. Doesn't mean
it's terrible.
Didn't make it better. Like, but if you're going to rip off those classics, do it well. Don't just do it half-assed.
Well, I think our biggest takeaway from this conversation is you really don't know if Benny is genuinely your friend or if it's just an inside joke.
But here's what I'll say. I don't think this is a horrible movie. I think it's fine. And I felt the same way about the first Meg. And I want these movies to be better just fine. I want them to be awesome. A Meg movie on paper, when I first heard they were making a Meg movie, I was like, this is going to be awesome. Then I went to the movie and I was like, oh, it's okay.
Well, we are going to wrap up, gentlemen. And as always, I thank you guys for being part of the extra movie butter boys. Excuse me. But folks, we're going to wrap up. Tune in next week. We're going to be reviewing Dracula Go Sailing or Dracula's Yacht or
another whatever movie. Yeah, I think Captain Ron would have been plug him in there, and it's a better movie.
Dude, Captain Ron on the last voyage of the Demeter. Please give me that all day. But yeah, we're going to be reviewing Pirate Dracula next week. But as always, we love you. We appreciate you tuning in. This is an organically made show by organically made people. That would be the one and only JT, the legendary Benny. And I am your host, Mark the Moose Haas. Thank you guys for tuning in. Have a good night.